There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast on the left.
Rise from your grave.
That's when the cannibalism started.
You've come all the way from Norway.
Mm-hmm.
You just got all of the Norwegian dirt off your clogs. You're sleeping on a down bed. And what you now believe is this may be the most comfortable bed you've ever been in.
Oh,
outside
yeah.
of the churn that you slept in back in the home country.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're in the small
yeah.
mattress and you hear like, you're like, oh, finally get some sleep. Belle says she's going to make me something nice in the morning for breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And she's real adamant about how nice breakfast is going to be.
Of course.
Right? But you're sleeping. For some reason she won't let you sleep in the bed together the first night because you're just a boarder this night. Then you awaken to see something not like a mixture of Norman Bates' mother and Jason standing above the bed while you're sleeping and then going, ooh, pitter-patter, pitter-patter, pitter-patter away. That is absolutely frightening.
Well, I don't
Can
know.
Can you imagine?
Kinda
this
cute,
whole story
though.
Is about being afraid of Yayas. This is being afraid of your Nana. If your Nana could be an unstoppable killing machine.
Oh, yeah.
That's Bill Goodness.
I think my grandmother was about to do that, but thankfully the Lord took her at 89 before she could kill. All right, everyone, this is the last podcast on the left. I am Ben. I'm staring at the beautiful face of Henry. No, wait, I'm staring at both of you.
Yeah.
But in New York City, I'm with Marcus.
That's me.
And then Henry Zabrowski is in L.A., like always.
Yeah.
So obviously we are on to part two of Belle Gunness, and she's kind of a dream woman. Is that what you're saying, Henry?
This fucking tiny foot bitch from Norway who's out there killing our people. I tell you what, you want to go into that big clotted cream covered spider's web. I understand. Like
yeah.
you get these fucking sweet ass letters. You are promised a bunch of salted fish and
yes.
as much corn as you can put into a barrel. Yeah, buddy, I'm taking my cock and balls over there.
So when we last left Belle Gunness, she had already murdered two husbands, as many as four of her own adopted children, and twice as many lonely Norwegian bachelors who were summoned forth from towns across the Midwest by Belle's ads in Norwegian language newspapers.
Ooh.
I also read another one of her ads that I really enjoyed that at the ended with, "Triflers need not apply."
Oh, no triflers.
Which I thought was fun. Yeah,
she
triflers.
Doesn't want like, no scrubs.
No scrubs, man.
Wow.
You can't get in her ride, dude, because it's her ride fucking ends at your grave.
Yes. Well, it sounds like she's very good at writing copy. She should have just gotten a job in marketing. I mean, this is sort of like the peak industrial time for the country. Come on.
Well, she was very good at writing copy in Norwegian. When she tried writing in English, she did not sound very intelligent.
Come and get it.
Come and get this gas, you fucking burner.
Okay.
But not every man who was summoned by Belle ended up in her hog pits. George Anderson from Missouri. What?
I just hope that's not a euphemism for the front and the back.
Her front back hog pit and her yeah. lower back hog pit. Yeah.
Call it the old hog pit.
Well, George Anderson from Missouri said he came to the Gunness home and fell fast asleep in the guest bedroom on his first night, completely satisfied with the arrangement he'd found. He thought he'd hit pay dirt.
Wow.
I fucking nailed this. Like, it's that type of pure sleep. I know it. I've only had it maybe three or four times in my life. Pure victory. Where you just have the covers pulled up to your chin like it's an old Norman Rockwell painting of a man sleeping. You're just like, ah, an easy night's sleep for a man who's done everything perfect. And it's always disaster. It
oh, yeah.
always means you're
always.
Going to wake up dead.
Always.
But around midnight, George said that he had a dream that, quote, something uncanny was hovering above him.
Ooh.
And when he opened his eyes, Belle Gunness was silently standing next to his bed, watching him sleep.
And he's just standing there, just like wide-eyed with the covers like up to his knees, and she goes, oopsie poopsie. And then click, 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 click. Just out of the room. So slam.
But okay, let's be honest, though. If she was like a super cute, you know, woman that he just moved in with, this would be romance.
No, it would
people,
be.
People love to stare at their partners when they sleep. They say, oh my God, I'm so happy to be with you. And then you wake up and you say, oh my God, honey, I can't believe that you're looking at me. I want to look at you too.
You are speaking as a 6'7" man, all right? I will say that if I saw any woman, and I've had these before, where you wake up and eyes are just locked on you, almost as if like, are you going to leave? I dare you to leave. It's very frightening. Women are frightening.
Yeah, I do not want to wake up to have someone boring. Like, if they're laying in bed next to you and they're resting their chin
yes.
on their hand, like,
that's
nice. Cute. That's really nice because, you know, it's like, and they're looking at you lovingly. Bell Gunness was towering over his bed, fully dressed, standing and staring.
Well, it's kind of comforting.
Can I see them one more time before you kill me?
And then when he just kind of uttered a squeak of surprise, she just muttered something unintelligible and ran out of the room.
Well, that's okay. That's uncomfortable. All right.
Yeah, and as expected, George did not close his eyes again for the rest of the night and left it done and kept the whole experience to himself. Because what are you going to do? Who are you going to tell? You're not going to go tell the cops that I went to some lady's house and I woke up and she was standing over my bed staring at me. Go arrest her. It's not criminal. It's
no.
just weird.
Okay.
But one man in Bell's life somehow set himself apart from all the rest, and he would play the role of either patsy or accomplice later on in Bell's life, although it seems fairly obvious that this guy was more of a useful idiot than anything else.
Mm.
That idiot's name was Ray Lamphere.
He's sort of a Midwest riffraff
yeah.
from Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Okay.
Now, perhaps part of the reason why Ray Lamphere survived his brush with Bell when so many other men didn't was because Ray was a local.
And locals can be trusted always.
Mm-hmm. Don't hassle
because
me,
because they
I'm
hate
local.
Anybody from the outside, which I also don't really understand because Bell Gunness also wasn't local.
Yeah. But Bell never killed a local, nor did she commit any crimes against
okay.
locals. Don't shit where you eat, in other words.
Absolutely.
Known as the weak and worthless no-account son of a formerly prominent member of the LaPorte community, Ray Lamphere was known to spend every penny he earned on drinking, gambling, and purchased affection.
Oh my goodness, what could
What's
that,
that
be? Honestly, that's just cut to him licking a honey ham in an alleyway.
Oh, this is better than a girlfriend. Because, oh, sweet salty ham, you can't leave or divorce me until you're in the vacation home that is my belly.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
And Ray was not a savvy gambler.
Oh.
According to Schechter, Ray once lost $50 in one night on a LaPorte Saloon slot machine, which in today's money amounts to about $1,500.
All right, this is just a little bit of gambling advice from Uncle Ben Kissel. Stay away from the slot machines. The casino makes all their money on the outside. You got to play your roulette, play your blackjack, even have a little fun with your craps. The slot machines, that's how they get you.
Mm-hmm.
But you learned that the hard way by being bilked by a fucking casino owner that's like, no, Benjamin, my new best friend. You see, for just $100, you get this one big coin. And you can get so many of them to play in our new big slot machines.
And you're like, huh, that sounds like a good deal. That sounds like a good time.
I did play a large slot machine on the way out of an Atlantic City hotel one time. It was quite fun to see how big it was. It's like when you sit in one of those big chairs at a festival.
Yeah.
And I pulled the big knob, and I got... But it's like big no money, because it was like no money, but like a big version of it.
Now, no one actually knows how Bell and Ray got to be tangled up in each other's lives. Some say that Bell just straight up stopped Ray in the street and offered him a job and a place to live because she was in need of a little affection.
Ooh.
Oh, damn, man. She just saw his fucking swagger. So I'm walking through and be like, checking... like parking meters for change and like picking up cigarettes off the street and be like, yeah, I make myself a millionaire. That's all you gotta do. If you scoop up enough street dust together, you can blow it in somebody's face and they give you $50 to go away.
Just cut
Bell's
to her.
Like, oh, if I want to ride your hips.
Just cut to her vision, just zooming in with the hearts like the Instagram super zoom. That's the one.
But more likely, Ray heard through the local carpenters union that the widow Gunnis out on McClang Road had work to offer. And since Belle still had to keep the honey trap of the farm in good working order, because it wouldn't do if the guy showed up and the farm looked like shit.
Of course.
She just hired Ray as an actual laborer. See, Belle Gunnis did usually have someone living in one of the bedrooms of her house to take care of some of the day-to-day operations of the farm, but she had recently lost longtime employee Emil Greening. See, Emil was young, and he'd been hanging around the Gunnis homestead because he had matrimonial ideas about Belle's daughter Jenny.
Oh.
But after Jenny had suddenly, quote-unquote, gone to California.
A lot of people seem to be going to California these days from Indiana. Swish, 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 swish.
Interesting.
Yeah, Belle told everyone that she went to college in California. Suddenly.
Of course.
Yeah. But after that, Emil lost interest and just quit. He's like, I got no reason to hang around here anymore.
Okay, so she's on the lookout for her next Kato Kaelin. She needs someone in the guest house.
You need somebody in the guest house you can pin all your crimes on at all times. This is important for all of us boys to know.
Sure.
Now, Ray Lamphere wasn't interested in a daughter for matrimony. Ray was more interested in Belle herself. And while marriage was certainly on the table for him, he was just as happy to be Belle's fuckboy in the meantime.
Ooh, all right.
You know what they say, why go out and buy milk if you got milk and inside this man that's living in your guest room?
Sure, sure.
Now, Ray, he was a smallish guy, and although he was 37, Belle still had a good 11 years on her new farmhand.
Mature.
And,
yes,
you know,
indeed.
The townsfolk, they got a good chuckle out of the thought of Ray giving it to Belle night after night, but Ray flipped it and took every chance he could get to brag about how he was plowing the widow Gunnis.
Whoa.
You think you guys are all good, huh? Making your standard love, just putting the penis in a vagina. Me? I can get all of me up in there. And I just spin and I spin and I spin and I spin and she screams and she screams. And I gotta say, I love being a farmhand.
All right, sir, we're just in line here at this bagel store. Is there a reason why you're telling us the plight of the tiny man?
Because I am wet to the touch, and currently I am touching your shoulder, my good sir.
But the thing was, from the reviews Belle got from both Ray and other farmhands, Belle was a bit of a wonder between the sheets.
Really?
A different employee, a man named Peter Colson, he both worked for and slept with Belle Gunnis for over 2 years. And he said that she would creep into his room at night.
Tiny little feet.
Uh-huh. And, quote, make love to him with sweet words and caresses.
Oh, yeah, dude. I think she made love like a mother cat.
Uh-huh.
Oh, he said she purred like a cat.
Really?
Yeah. She's cleaning all the fur. You know what I mean? Like, it's like special attention. There's something about, she likes her little snacks. She
right.
likes her little boy snacks, which is like, but they're not, I mean, they're men. They're yeah. they're full-grown men
they're
snacks.
They're our age.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, it'd be fun being treated like a little bonbon
sure.
by a huge woman.
It reminds me of Ace Ventura Pet Detective when the woman, which I finally understood this better as I got older, when she pays him in a blowjob, when he rescues her dog.
Didn't understand what he was doing as
no.
a child. I did not know what was happening.
And then
in that
he puts his hands up. He's like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a oral sex joke. I just thought that she was tickling his feet or something. I
yes,
had no idea
I didn't know what
was happening.
Well, this is what Peter Colson added about Belle's bedtime habits in a direct quote.
She was soft and gentle in her ways. I never saw such a woman. I never sausage such a woman.
There it is, a good pun.
And Ray Lamphere was digging in deep on the Gunnis grounds in more ways than one.
Really?
He was going around town telling people that pretty soon he was going to be the master of the farm, and everybody else could kiss his ass.
Whoa.
I'm going to trash all the wheat. I'm going to murder all the cows. You know what I'm putting in? A goddamn roller coaster, because it's Daddy's farm now.
Wow.
Everybody come over to Daddy's farm, where you're going to get, just, you're going to scream yourself to death with enjoyment.
Interesting. It seems almost like small people may have a complex, like a complex would be like, I'm bigger than you think, you know, like something like that. By the way, Puffin almost got killed by a pit bull today.
Oh.
So be careful out there.
Always.
You pull somebody's papers on the fucking yard, you got to be able to fucking get over. They're going to split your wig, bro.
I know. It was his bad.
But Ray Lamphere's dreams all died when Andrew Helgelin showed up. Andrew was a 49-year-old wheat farmer from South Dakota who had previously done 10 years in the penitentiary for robbing the Red Wing Minnesota post office, then burning it down in an attempt to hide his crimes.
If you get rid of the building, the crimes no longer exist. But whatever happened in there, you got to just delete the memory of the entire incident.
But can we just say, like, one thing is theft, the other thing is arson. Maybe just stick with the theft.
Yeah.
Because all he did was double up his crime and make it a lot worse.
Mm-hmm.
But this also showed Belle Gunness was very particular about who she fucked and who she murdered. And she kept them very separate. She seemed to really only like fucking her employees.
Yeah.
Where she'd get the employees and she'd fuck them for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about sort of the transactional nature of them being an employee that she would let them live. Like the fact that she had multiple employees that she fucked and then let live is very interesting about how every single potential husband who showed up immediately died. Where that's where Ray Lacombe actually got out pretty easy, and he doesn't even understand what he was. She just was such a master manipulator.
Yeah.
So this is the only time in human history for someone who is conducting an interview to ask the question, fuck, marry, kill, and not have it be just like a super hacky question to three podcasters who don't want to answer that question anymore.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, Andrew was, of course, a Norwegian immigrant, and it answered one of Bell's ads in a newspaper called the Minneapolis Tittendi, which I think is...
That is obviously... It's some kind of pronouncement. I don't know what that is.
Tittendi.
You want to see the centerfold on that? Big piece of corn. Who? Corn of the week.
Yeah. I can't wait to see the Minneapolis Tittendi.
I think it's the word for newspaper.
Oh.
Because I know there's the Bergen Tittendi.
Oh, of course. We all know about the Bergen Tittendi. Yeah.
But while other men came running into Bell's arms after only a couple of letters, Andrew Helgelin proved the toughest fish to land.
Ooh.
Andrew and Belle corresponded with each other for 18 months before Andrew finally set foot in La Porte. And in that time, Belle wrote between 75 and 80 letters begging him to come.
Wow.
Ooh, thirsty.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
See, from what we know from the few men who survived Belle Gunness, there usually weren't more than a few letters exchanged between Belle and her victims before the victims came running because of either loneliness or greed.
Mm.
But as far as we know, Belle spent more time reeling in Andrew Helgelin than any other victim. And luckily for historians and our listeners alike, the vast majority of Belle's letters to Andrew actually survived.
Woohoo!
Live from your grave. From your grave.
Now, Belle gave Andrew the big sales pitch right up top. She told him that she had a beautiful farm full of fruit trees right in the middle of a neighborhood where fancier folk had their summer homes.
Wow.
But she had her real home there.
That's better.
Yeah, that's even
that's
better.
What you want.
Everyone knows that living at the vacation spot is so much better for people who know about living in Dubai.
Yes.
Where you're not just like workmen slaves for the rich people.
Yeah.
It was 74 acres of paradise, Belle said, worth $400,000 in today's money, although both of those claims were gross exaggerations. Her actual claim was about half that.
Okay.
And besides just boasting about her own land, Belle made sure to lay it thick when it came to stroking Andrew's ego.
Hmm.
One of her letters read, in part,
"You impress me with being a good man with a strong and honest character. A real, genuine Norwegian in every respect. And it is difficult to find such a man, and not every woman appreciates. There are plenty of these American dudes around here, but I would not even look at them, no matter how often they ask me.
Ooh. Ooh. Gunther.
Can you hear me pressing me bosom?
So they called them dudes back then?
Dude was an insult.
Is that right?
Yeah, dude was originally like punk. Was also originally an insult.
My father told me, for some reason, this is a piece of information he traveled down the line. A dude is a hair on an elephant's butt.
Huh.
That's what he said. Now, granted, he also believed that Jesus Christ is the king. And at this point, the world should have already ended. But that is one thing that he did tell me.
Yeah, it's like my father only ever taught me one thing. In Polish, he's like, well, the only thing you gotta know, Henry Thomas, is that, is the Baji Dupa.
Yeah, Dupa.
It's kiss my ass in Polish.
Yeah. Yep.
That's all he says, yeah.
My grandfather used to tell me that a dude was a guy with, underwear that was full of holes.
I don't think we were ever told the truth. None of us. Wow.
I had to learn how to shave from a magazine.
Really?
Yep.
Now, usually, these types of sentiments were enough to lure a man out to La Porte, where he would soon be stripped of all his worldly belongings and murdered with either a hatchet or a meat cleaver before being sliced into six separate pieces and buried in the hog pen.
Jeez.
But Andrew was playing hard to get, so Belle started playing up the romantic aspect. Here's an example of her switch in tone, written in a letter that came just a month after correspondence began.
I long so to know you better, but I will try to wait with the patience until you get here. I have now thrown away all other answers I got and keep all of yours in a secret place by themselves. Can a hero hear me squeeze? You truly do not know how highly I prize them, as I have not found anything so genuinely Norwegian and real in all the 20 years I have been in America.
Oh, my goodness.
So Norwegian.
Yes.
Come to me. Come to Bill. Come now.
Wow, look at that. That's a hard sell.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, indeed. Very good. I'm compelled.
I seem to have spilt a bunch of honey on my chair.
Uh-oh.
It comes from a crevice.
Yikes.
But with every letter, Belle had a similar refrain. Take all your money out of the bank and come to La Porte as soon as possible.
Oh, you know you just take all of your money out. Oh, you bring it to me. Nothing bad will happen.
Nothing at all.
Come to me. Come to Bill's.
Yes.
And she had one other strange request that gave Andrew a little pause. Belle said that his moving to La Porte would be all the sweeter if it came as a total and complete surprise to everyone.
Wow.
So it was paramount that she not tell a single soul, not even his family.
Wow.
Because that would just be so romantic.
That is so romantic. It would ruin it.
It would ruin it if anybody knew your location or your whereabouts.
Yes, absolutely.
And
right.
And to see this man with one of those Amish beards with a pipe, let's say, a big straw hat, just looking at these letters being like, this fucking chick, she's going to fucking kill me. And I love it. Absolutely, I love it.
Love it.
And she also made sure to tell him to come alone. Because she said it would be best if they were alone at the beginning.
Of course it would be.
Sending a not so subtle hint that there would be plenty of alone time activities waiting for when he showed up.
Belle, my friend Harry is actually a cuck. Is it okay if I bring a cuck?
Yeah, he can watch us make the bouncy.
Oh, he loves that.
Don't come on my beautiful tiny feet.
I couldn't hit him if I tried, Belle.
And Belle wasn't shy with the double entendres either. In one letter, she wrote, quote,
we shall be so happy once you get here. Then I will make a cream pudding, quote unquote. Many other good things.
With my downstairs stove.
Yeah, your downstairs stove?
My downstairs stove making the bouncy.
That's going to be where the cream pudding is being created, your downstairs stove?
Oh, you know it to be true.
Come to bed. Come to me.
And Bell always made sure to hit on the promise of a little slice of Norway right in the middle of Indiana. When Andrew delayed his departure in December of 1906, she wrote, quote,
"Who will eat all this Norwegian cod fish and cream pudding and enjoy all the pleasures I have planned?"
Was that another double entendre as she masturbated? Oh, I guess
no,
I will.
No, I have made food, and I am going to let it sit for several months while you take the boat to America. It is a Norwegian way.
But when Andrew delayed his departure again in September, Bell went for the Hail Mary.
Uh-oh.
"Make up your mind as soon as possible as to what you really intend to do. In your next letter, let me have the great happiness to hear that you are soon on your way here, as then I will be the happiest and I will know that I have found the best friend in the world."
I thought you were going to say she posed in a picture that would be the centerfold of Cherry magazine.
Yeah,
just
dude.
That she just, Hail Mary.
She did the same exact George Costanza pose that he does in his erotic picture.
And with that, Bell got him. Andrew either forgot about or ignored all of the red flags that had been popping up over the last 18 months.
Okay.
And there was more. She also insisted that he leave not a single cent behind and that he should sell everything and bring all of the cash carefully sewn into his underwear.
Oh my goodness.
You can't resist it, man. That's a passionate woman. She wants all of you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all of your money.
That's a part of it. But she's going to make the bouncy bouncy, and she's going to cover you in cream pudding, and you're going to get all the salted codfish that you want on a bunch of fruit trees. I guess that's good then. That was a big thing then.
Yeah, it could be good.
And so Andrew Helgeline came to La Porte in January of 1908, and as soon as Andrew arrived, Belle tossed her old fuck buddy Ray Lamphere aside without even so much as an explanation.
Oh, that's sad.
Ray later said, quote,
"After he came, she had no use for old Ray." I tell you what, I'll wait forever for that sweet, sweet bouncy bouncy. She's got me hooked, goddammit. I love salted cod. It used to make me throw up.
It's
now
okay.
I love it.
It's okay, Ray. It'll get better.
As such, Ray went from sleeping in the upstairs guest bedroom to making his own straw bed in the barn. Literally overnight.
So he's
guess
just...
I'll be sleeping with the pigs then, huh? Oh, I guess Ray doesn't have a place in the house anymore, huh?
But he's...
Well, I hope you have a good time having a husband. Oh, Bella, I was good enough for you. I'm smart. You could have put me in charge of things.
Good Lord, that's... So it's like the movie Get Out, where he was like no longer the prized guy,
mm-hmm.
and now he had to just go watch... this other dude just lived his life.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, what was more, Bell wouldn't even let Ray talk to Andrew Helgeline. About this, Ray said, quote,
"She gave me the dickens and told me to leave him alone."
What? The dickens?
Gave him the dickens.
He's giving her the dickens, and I got the dickens sleeping out with the goddamn pigs.
Well, I hope you don't do any dickens in there. That's very dangerous and bad.
But pretty soon, Bell discovered that Andrew had not taken her advice to bring every cent he was worth in cash.
Uh-oh.
Andrew had brought about $3,000 in deposit certificates. So, after waiting all of 3 days, Bell forced Andrew into town to cash the deposit certificates at the local bank.
Oh.
But much to Bell's displeasure, it would be 5 more days before the certificates could be cashed.
Oh.
That meant that Bell, who was used to taking down her prey within the first couple of nights, had to spend almost 2 weeks entertaining Andrew and keeping up the facade that she wasn't going to immediately murder him the moment she got the money.
Honestly, that is really hard for her. That
is
hard for her.
This is full on Debbie and Fester.
It really
right
is.
Now. Like her having to like milk him, like having to be nice to him, just being like, "Yeah, if he can make the bouncy bouncy again." And he's just like, oh yeah, this is the best time. I love America. And then you're just like, because apparently she also slowly feed them poison and oranges. That's another one of those folk tales.
Ooh.
That you wonder, because oranges are very rare.
Yeah.
Time.
Okay.
Live from your grave. Live from your grave.
On January 14th, Bell Gunness got the money. $2,839 went into Bell's pockets that morning, half in cash and half in coin. And on that same day, Bell sent Ray on a horse trade errand, which cleared the house of adults.
So just go trade out that horse with another horse. Would you like that?
Yeah, that's what a horse trade errand.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
She's
just... Oh, but I love Derek. Derek yeah. That's my favorite of our brown horses.
Yeah, I just trade him out with another horse.
Oh, they're not just tradable. They each have their own personalities. You don't even sleep in the barn. You don't know what these animals are like.
I don't want to break this to you, but your great-great-great-grandson loves Pokemon Go.
Oh, no!
Yeah, it's genetic.
And besides Belle and possibly the kids, because remember, there were three children knocking around the house this whole time.
Jeez.
Ray Lamphere was the last person to see Andrew Helgeline alive. When it came to murdering Andrew, Bell didn't even wait until that night to do the deed. So as we said, while we don't know exactly how Bell Gunness killed her victims, there are theories. Some victims we know Bell poisoned because investigators found arsenic in the stomachs of the bodies they eventually dug out of Bell's hog pits. Mm. But it wasn't the arsenic that killed them. It seems like the arsenic was just either a way to lay the men low or to make their death that much worse.
I think she got pleasure out of the pain that they were in, but it was to make sure she's smart.
Yeah.
She didn't want to fucking struggle.
Yeah.
He's not trying to fucking, like, this is not a battle to the fucking death here. All right. This is your death.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not a battle to the death, but if your death involves a lot of blood, it's going to make Belle really happy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, her little slippery tiny feet slipping on all the blood.
Well, it's thought that as the men were dying in agony, Belle would approach them in their beds and take either a meat cleaver or a hatchet to the skull of the victims to finish them off.
She didn't
need to do that.
No, could have done without that. Definitely didn't need that. No way.
No, she just double tap. She would double tap to make sure that they were done.
Okay.
Then, after the murder, the bodies would be taken to either her cellar or her abattoir, where they would be dismembered into disposable chunks, not unlike Canadian serial killer Robert Picton.
She also had pig sense.
Yeah.
Because she knew that the pigs were actually just getting more succulent every single time she got married.
Right.
So these pigs are getting bigger and rounder, and she's making the best sausages in town.
Right.
It's an investment in herself.
I wonder if the pigs knew they were doing something wrong. You know, because animals do know. I don't think they're supposed to eat human flesh.
I think pigs are supposed to eat whatever they want.
I think the pigs knew she was up to no good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they weren't complaining.
No, definitely. They were getting theirs.
See, even though pigs are technically smarter than dogs, I think a dog would feel worse about eating a human than a pig would.
Mm. I think I actually agree with Marcus's hot take.
Okay, we'll have to ask a pig.
But the thing is with Andrew, though, is that he seemed to be a different case. Now, maybe Belle knew that she only had the day to kill Andrew until Ray got back from the horse errand.
Right.
But I think it's possible that after 18 months of courtship and almost 2 weeks of playing nice, Belle just lost her shit. It was Andrew Helgeline's body who bore the defensive wounds we mentioned in the first episode.
Ooh.
And judging from the state of his dismembered body, it's probable that Belle attacked him head on with a full steam of rage and a meat cleaver in her hand.
Whoa, scary.
You're sitting down to dinner, because I bet you at this point you've built up almost like a schedule where Belle would make you breakfast, and she's working the field, and you're looking over the land, and you're having a nice time. And I bet you it would be she'd come home, make dinner, he's enjoying himself, he's the king of this castle, he's about to fucking own this whole farm. And then finally she gets back from the bank, and instead of the normal pep, 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 you hear jingle, 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 she's covered in coins. She's got a whole fucking sack of his money. And she puts it down, and he's just like, oh, we will have our dinner now. And then it's just like, fuck you, Andrew. She comes and just, wait.
Yeah. And also, the longer that Andrew Helgeline was alive, the more there was a chance that he was going to find evidence of the previous 10 murders.
That's going to be a creepy day on the farm.
Yeah, because there's, you know, they're filled in the hog pits. There's an entire room full of men's clothing and trunks.
Yes.
Like, there's evidence all over the place, and all it takes is for Andrew to open the wrong door one day, or to just go down into the cellar and see that the cellar is covered in blood.
What? We didn't really even cover that in the last episode, because it's true. She had one room filled with luggage and clothes and pictures of dozens of men, and you know that happened to at least a couple of them, where they just were like, oh, what's in here? This is going to be my house.
Cool.
I wonder what kind of room. This is supposed to be some kind of billiards room, and then that just bump, 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 as each eye connects, like sees all the luggage and all the pictures and all the shit, and then it just boom in the back of the head.
Well, we know that Belle killed Andrew that day, because when Ray returned that night, quote, to see what the old lady was up to.
Oh, really?
Andrew Helgelein was gone, never to be seen again until a shovel turned out his butchered body.
Ooh.
So Andrew went to California as well? It didn't seem like he's much of a tanner, you know what I mean?
No.
Much of a movie star, so I don't really know what why he's going west, but I tell you what, it's good to be back in the saddle again.
But this dude had to know something was going on, right? Her Kato Kaelin.
Yeah.
He had to know.
We will talk about this. This is heavily debated.
Yeah.
In the by Gunness heads. That's what we'll call them.
They're called Gunness heads.
Because we don't.
This doesn't even work.
We don't know whether or not he was an accomplice, but it seems to be. I mean, she kept him around for a reason.
Yeah.
Right.
I think she kept him around to fuck and to work his farm.
I don't know. I mean, honestly, she must have needed some companionship.
And with that murder, Belle added Andrew's life savings to her already large pile of cash. To give you some perspective, a newspaper added up the total sum of Belle's ill-gotten gains after the discovery of her crimes. They came to a figure of $1.2 million.
Woo!
In today's money.
Good for
making
her.
That paper.
But that's, making that paper.
But that's also with, you know, all the insurance payouts from her first two husbands,
right,
which wasn't a tidy sum, wasn't like a small sum, but still, even after that, she would have had to have made like about $800,000 from her other victims.
Oh, gee. And when I said good for her, I really don't mean good for her.
But over 7 years, it kind of like it cuts down.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see why she kept needing to feed the bank account.
But what was she spending all this money on? They didn't have entertainment.
Maintenance on the farm? Because I don't know how successful the farm was. The whole thing could have been operating the red. The whole thing could have been like a murdering husband version of Netflix.
Now, Andrew did indeed take one of Belle's pieces of advice in keeping his move to La Porte a closely held secret. He didn't even tell his own brother that he was moving.
Jeez.
But Andrew did leave quite the trail of evidence behind.
Ooh, like little candies.
See, when no one heard from Andrew for almost 2 weeks, both his friends and family started getting concerned.
Yeah.
So, a farmhand named John Holth, who'd been charged with looking after Andrew's livestock, started poking around Andrew's cabin. And eventually, Holth found dozens upon dozens of relatively steamy letters full of promises of land and love from a stout, mysterious woman in La Porte, Indiana, who called herself Bella Gunness.
He's looking at these letters and he falls in love himself.
Indeed. The original.
This is the dream woman.
Yes.
This is dream. This is beautiful.
This is what really, this is what actual penthouse forum letters are. They're not so steamy. It doesn't end up in a wonderful threesome.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it ends up in murder.
Well, pretty soon, Azel Helgelin, Andrew's brother, started writing Belle Gunness to ask just what the fuck happened to Andrew. As always, though, Belle stonewalled Azel at every turn with a steady torrent of make-em-up bullshit. She wrote that she'd also like to know where Andrew had run off to.
Well, it's funny you say that.
Where is Andrew? Everybody's asking the question of where is Andrew, because I don't know either.
Yeah. Wow, flip it and reverse it.
Mm-hmm. She said as far as she knew, Andrew had either gone to Chicago or New York to look for the other Helgelin brother, the notorious professional gambler.
Oh.
Meanwhile, Belle was also dealing with fallout from Ray Lamphere, who was understandably still feeling a bit jilted.
I'm not just me. Okay.
No.
Yeah, I got a 9-inch hog, and I got an easy attitude, and I'm great at plowing both the field and your sweet, sweet tukas, sweet, sweet belt. God, I love you. But I tell you what, this is the last you see to me. All right? Because I'm going myself really to California, and I'm going to sing.
Oh, very nice. He's like the girlfriend from Wayne's World, who's like, you're not careful. You're going to lose me. Lost you 3 months ago.
So on February 3rd, Ray either quit or got fired from the Gunness farm, and Bell pretty quickly replaced him with a guy named Joe Maxson.
Mm. Oh, you're going to replace me with some guy named Joe, huh? Oh, it's some guy named Joe.
Smart money is probably on Ray quitting over a wage dispute, because over the coming weeks and months, Ray embarked on a campaign of skulking around the Gunness farm in an attempt to recoup his wages and to get his stuff back.
Oh, my
Hell
God.
Yeah, I found a bunch of potatoes in the garbage. I can resell these at the fair. Yes.
Yeah. It's like when you play Borderlands and you have to do all the side missions because people are thirsty.
Meanwhile, like, you don't think Bell, who is an actual supervillain, can't see him skulking around, just, like, looking through curtains, is watching Ray, like, yeah, nobody could see me, huh? Like, cartoonishly tiptoeing, like, trying to just take whatever is a nail down. She's like, oof, is that Ray? I love him. Look at him steal. He is a man after my own heart.
Aww.
Well, finally, Bell had enough and called up the local sheriff, Sheriff Smutzer, and had
oh, God, so much liverwurst. The amount of liverwurst that Sheriff Smutzer has consumed is really remarkable.
And Smutzer had Ray arrested for trespassing, for which Ray was fined $1.
Whoa, that's such a cute amount of money. You're fined $1. Like, oh, I'm almost happy I did it.
I guess I won't get a lollipop today. Cool, thanks. Here's your dollar.
But Ray still didn't stop. And so, in late March 1908, Bell filed an affidavit alleging that Ray Lamphere was insane.
Now Bell is starting to discover that love is the most dangerous game of all.
Indeed.
She claimed that Ray came to her house at night, usually drunk, and just looked through the windows. And when asked to describe his mental state, she said that he was silent, melancholy, restless, seclusive, dull, profane, filthy, intemperate, sleepless, and criminal.
You think he's cool for you? Here you go, you're gonna fuck some guy named Joe? Yeah. You think that Joe's gonna have, fill the luggage room? He's gonna move all the luggage around and the luggage room so all looks in a fucking way? You fucking like it? You fucking tiny footed bitch? You're fucking tiny footed bitch, and I'm gonna say it out loud because
wow,
I finally
Ray,
have a fucking courage
wow.
to say it. You got great tits and you got a wonderful attitude. I love the shit out of you. You got tiny feet and I want to kiss him. I still love you, Bill. You know that for a fact.
Derailed, Ray. Derailed on that. Sounds like the first friend of yours that really gets into The Cure. He's like, you got to listen to it. I'm like, I don't want to be sad with you right now.
Well, this report was actually enough for a formal hearing, even though Ray's physician, Dr. Bowell, said that Ray was just fine.
It's fine.
I took a look at Ray. Yeah, Ray and I spent a lot of time. We went up to the Greyhound together at Greyhound Station, and I checked his asshole 6-7 times in the bathroom. I gotta say, only 2 or 3 of those times I had shit in it. So.
Wow.
I don't know what you want from me. I'm just a doctor.
Do you check a lot of patients' buttholes at the old Greyhound Station there, doctor?
Just when they pay me.
But still, a 3-member insanity committee had to be formed to examine Ray Lamphere officially. They said his memory was good, his speech was intelligent and coherent, and while he was not perfectly sane because he was, quote, slightly nervous, he was not insane.
Okay.
So they let him go.
Y'all should be nervous. Because her sweet, sweet crevice is going to make some cream pudding that it's going to make all y'all slaves like it did to me.
Whoa.
Right? It's coming for you next. You think you're immune to a beautiful Norweed with her sweet, sweet bosoms and her salted cod. I swear to God, I'm going to burn this courthouse down.
Yep, well, I wish we could go back and say he was crazy, but the
too late. No take-backsies.
Yeah, no, I know. We had the no take-backsie rule.
Of course, this whole episode just made things worse, and Bell had Ray arrested again in early April. And that charge actually went to trial, during which Bell claimed that she saw Ray skulking around her pig pen, and when she tried to shoo him away, he pulled a fence post out of the ground and ran off with it.
You're the only one? You think the only one is in charge here? I'm in charge too. I'm taking this fence post. Besides him.
I'm just going to steal this massive inconvenience for me, and I'm going to run to send you a message. I'm running away with it.
But Bell's campaign against Ray was starting to backfire. See, even though witnesses put Ray at another farm at the time of Bell's fence post story, Ray's attorney figured that maybe Ray needed a little extra push to get an acquittal.
Mm-hmm.
So, to destroy Bell's credibility, Ray's defense attorney started asking questions about Bell's checkered past.
Interesting.
Ooh, it's always the fucking money.
Yeah.
It's always the money
mm-hmm.
that does it.
He asked about Peter Gunness's mysterious death, Mad Sorensen's mysterious death, and the suddenest of her daughter's move to California to, quote-unquote, go to college.
Yeah.
And all this time, Bell was not only writing letters to more men, but was also continuing her game with Azel Helgeline. She told Azel that Andrew had sent her a letter from Chicago, but when Azel asked for the letter, Bell told him that Ray Lamphere had stolen it.
Of course he did, it along with that fence post.
Absolutely. Ray Lamphere is the Hamburglar.
Needless to say, Azel didn't buy it and kept asking questions and sending letters. Now, it was obvious to Bell that Azel wasn't going to give up, and it was only a matter of time before Azel showed up in LaPorte himself.
Mm.
And Azel was not going to keep it quiet where he was headed to. Furthermore, the townsfolk were starting to finally connect a few dots after Bell's dirty laundry was laid out plain for all to see during Ray Lamphere's trespassing trial.
Mm.
In other words, the end was coming.
Oh,
yeah, man, the fucking net. The net was dropping. And she was watching it all happen.
Mm-hmm. So she really made a mistake. She put herself under oath, I would assume, right? Was she on the stand?
Well, it wasn't even necessary that it was under oath. It was just now when it became clear to everyone, like, oh, people around Bell Gunness tend to end up dead
right.
a lot. And there's been a lot of cousins coming to the house. And no one's seen them leave. Everyone's seen them get there, but
right.
no one's seen them leave. So finally the Midwestern politeness is starting to break down into to the point where it's like, we may actually have to arrest this woman.
Oh, but to be fair, the cream pudding is very good.
Yeah, man, it's fucking salty. But Bell Gunness was truly was very smart. She truly was an actual villain. And she knew that the one thing that her plan could not abide was eyeballs.
Yeah.
Eyeballs looking at her shit. She needed to operate in quiet and private, and which is why she killed every single person that had any sort of connection to her bullshit, except for Ray, who I think she just also had a weird, fucked up, moonlighting kind of scenario with, where she was suing him and doing all this shit, but she would also kind of goad him. The two of them were kind of in this lock back and forth where I think Ray knew a lot of shit that was going on too, but he actually was kind of happy to be a part of it.
Yeah, it seems like the closest relationship she's ever had.
But I think the fact that Ray was not killed shows you that Ray didn't have anything to do with it. Because if Ray did have something to do with it, if Ray did have knowledge, she would have just fucking murdered him and not had any compunction about it.
Maybe she thought he was too dumb to convince anyone that he was telling the truth.
But think about this, how she went to the law. It's so interesting that she actually used the police. The last people she should be speaking to, the last people she probably wants to be speaking to, there's a weird emotional connection. Like, it almost shows the suing him was almost a proxy of murdering him, where she didn't want to kill him for some reason.
Yeah. Maybe it was also in her mind, she's like, there's no way they could think I murdered all these people. Why would I call the police?
Yeah.
I'm just a good gal.
Yeah, could be.
Okay.
No matter what Ray Lamphere's role was in all this, it became clear to Bell that something had to be done. But to this day, what Belle did exactly is still a mystery that nobody, not even Harold Schechter, has ever been able to solve.
Wow.
All we know, or at least what we think we know, is that Belle had a plan. In late April 1908, Gunness told a clerk at the dry goods store that Ray Lamphere was perfectly capable of murdering Belle and her children before setting fire to the Gunness home, which struck the dry goods clerk as an oddly specific thing to say.
Yeah, very specific.
It's really, really specific.
Yes, yes,
it's
indeed.
Really,
especially
really
to
specific.
Someone that is little more than an acquaintance.
Right.
Yeah, just being like, Ray Lamphere's my he works on my farm. I sometimes fuck him. Oh, you guys fuck? He's going to kill me. He's going to kill my children. He's going to set fire to the house. Wait a second. You're fucking Ray?
Then, on the morning of April 27th, Belle Gunness's two young daughters, Myrtle and Lucy, came to school highly distressed, saying they'd been beaten by their mother that morning for almost going into the cellar. Turned out, the girls had been forbidden from even going close to the door. But on that morning, they'd forgotten the long-standing decree, and it started making their way downstairs.
Uh-oh.
But before they got to the bottom, Belle discovered the incursion and dragged them back upstairs, where they got a scolding and a beating, which, surprisingly, was not common behavior for Belle. It was out of character for her.
It's a part of her game. Look at BTK with his daughters. Look at all of these people that had full-on families. Gary Ridgway had family. They didn't fuck with their families.
Mm-hmm. And the next day, Belle's behavior got even more suspicious. She paid a visit to her lawyer, Melvin E. Lelliter, and told him that Ray was threatening to burn down the house.
Mm.
And as such, she wanted to make a will. Belle left everything to her children, Myrtle, Lucy, and Philip, but this struck the lawyer as somewhat odd because Belle failed to mention her fourth child who had, quote-unquote, gone to college and was now, quote-unquote, getting married.
Whoa.
It's also weird how she kept doing the air quotes.
Yeah.
She kept doing that as she spoke. It just seems to me, I guess it's a weird Norwegian quirk.
I guess so.
But Belle said, should the children also somehow die? I don't know, they might die.
Why are you moving your arms like that, ma'am? Why are you acting like it's some kind of hypothetical?
One day this will be an I don't know emoji. You don't know that yet, though.
Belle wrote that all of her money was to go to the Norwegian Children's Home of Chicago. And after making the will, Belle went to the store and bought candy, cake, and a toy train for the kids as a, quote, little surprise.
Oh.
Oh, no.
This is great. As long as their kids are Neil Young, they're going to love that model train.
And finally, Belle bought a bunch of groceries and 2 gallons of kerosene.
What do I say to that?
Interesting.
Weird.
And it was while Belle was paying for the groceries and the kerosene that who should walk into the store but Ray Lamphere.
Oh, my God. In a town of five people, you will run into each other.
You fuck to everybody. It's like a big town, but it's a small town. You know what I mean? It's like everybody knows everybody. And Ray Lamphere, what about walking in with your ex? Your ex is right there.
Oh.
Spot 2 gallons of kerosene.
Yikes.
And you just stare at each other, and they kind of wink, and they kind of give a knowing smile. You know what I mean?
Didn't wink and give a knowing smile.
I don't know.
You're making that up.
Telling stories. Weaving tales.
Indeed. Well, he just walks in.
It was said that Ray did nothing more than silently watch her untie her horse and leave for home. They did not interact with each other. They didn't look at each other. It was like the other didn't exist.
Belle, wait a second. Don't you remember when you told me you loved me, baby? You said you'd be coming back this spring. Dead Belle, no. Oh, that lucky horse.
Single tear, sad.
By the next morning, though, Belle Gunness's quote-unquote fears about Ray Lamphere would be realized. For the Gunness home would be nothing more but a heap of ash and rubble.
Live from your grave.
According to farmhand Joe Maxson, the fire began at about 4 a.m. He said that he was asleep in the upstairs guest bedroom and had at first assumed that Belle was just burning breakfast. But when Joe awoke fully, he realized that the whole house was filled with smoke. So he made his way outside. Now he tried going back in for Belle and the kids, but while he was trying to break down the front door with an axe, because the way he'd come out was now presumably impassable, part of the roof collapsed. Neighbors soon arrived and used a ladder to climb to Belle's bedroom for rescue, but they found that the bed was empty.
Uh-oh.
So, by this point, all that was left to do was to let the fire burn out to see just how many of the Gunnesses were dead.
Now it's 1906 for you. Well, all we can do now is let it burn down. No way we can stop this fire. There's nothing wet. There's no way we get like a water or nothing like that. No, we just watch it.
Nah. Let it get tired. Yeah. Our big thing is we let fire get tired.
I've heard that. That's a good technique.
By the time the flames died down a few hours later, there was nothing left but three brick walls and a pile of rubble. Now, it was immediately clear to investigators that the fire was man-made, because the fire had obviously been started at where else but the cellar door, using what else but a shitload of kerosene.
Mm.
Oh, weird.
Interesting.
Weird.
Weird.
Some naturally suspected Belle, but Sheriff Smutzer immediately set his sights on Ray Lamphere, because Belle had made sure to voice her concerns often and loudly over the previous few days.
See, nothing gets past Sheriff Smeltzer. He knows exactly what's going on here.
Digging began for the bodies of Belle and her children almost immediately, while the ruins were still smoldering. And about 12 hours after the fire began, a shovel hit something soft. When the bodies were uncovered, it looked to investigators as if Belle had thrown a quilt over the bodies of the children to try and protect them from the flames, but it was all for naught, as all four bodies had burned beyond recognition.
Yeah, I mean, that's not gonna, it's a flammable, it's a quilt is not gonna stop a fire.
You die from smoke inhalation before you die. You don't die from the actual fire itself. If you die in a fire, usually you die from smoke inhalation.
But isn't it better?
But also psychologically with serial killers, if you see, a lot of times if they do that and if they hide the faces of the victims, it's almost an attempt to keep them from looking at you. That the corpses, in a way, if you cover the face of your victim, you can't see what you're doing anymore. It's been done.
But Belle Gunness liked looking in the faces of her victims.
I don't know, but then there are things that also, stuff like this feels like a move to, this is a practical killing.
Yeah.
This is practical.
Yeah.
If we'll get into, obviously, you know, what's going to happen here. But this is her trying to clean shit up. This is not pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
For me. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
IMO.
I'll agree. But the strangest thing had happened. While the children's bodies were largely intact, the body of the woman that was assumed to be Belle Gunness was missing one very important part. The body was missing its head.
Okay, now we got a problem. Where's the head?
Ray? I don't know. I didn't know. What are you talking about? Yeah. I've never sawed a damn thing in my life. I'm not even good at sawing wood.
Oh.
I'm a bad farmhand.
Well.
Yeah, and Ray Lamphere was caught and officially arrested for arson and murder almost immediately after the discovery of the Gunness bodies.
You guys gotta be fucking kidding me. This is absolute... You are the dumbest cops I have ever seen. All I do is eat pussy.
Oh,
that's all I do.
Really?
I stole a post. All right?
You did steal the post, then, didn't you, sir?
Put me in solitary confinement for being in love. Go ahead.
Now, Ray did have an alibi for that night. On the night of the Gunness fire, Ray had actually been having sex with a 70-year-old woman named Elizabeth Smith, whom Harold Schechter described as, quote, spindle-shanked.
Oh, I don't know what spindle-shanked is, but very interesting.
Very evocative.
It is.
It is.
Now, I'm not going to utter her extremely racist local nickname here, but her race, since she was the daughter of former slaves, played a part in how the people of LaPorte ended up perceiving Ray Lamphere.
He just liked him old, man.
He did. That's what I think Schechter said, or somebody else is, that, like, he just liked maternal figures.
Okay.
He liked being taken care of.
You know what it was? I'm going to straight up say,
It's because I love pancakes. And there's just something about a woman that's got them built in, you know?
Yes, absolutely. Okay.
Now, although Elizabeth swore that Ray was with her that night, this admission gave Ray less credibility.
Oh, no.
Because he had admitted to having sex with an old black lady, which, even though it proved he couldn't have set the fire or killed the Gunnesses, somehow made it more possible that he committed the crime.
I'm a connoisseur of nanas, all right? I am an abuela licker. I absolutely love it, and I'm not ashamed of it. If you want to say, oh, the wolf would come to the old lady's house and eat her and take on her clothes, I would just make love to the old woman. All right? Let's just have it out.
Nice wolf, yeah.
As such, Ray's charge stuck, and the trial date was set for May 11th. Meanwhile, an autopsy had begun on the supposed body of Belle Gunness, although the head was still missing. And even then, the body was in terrible shape. The left arm was burned off to the upper third of the humerus, the right arm was burned off at the shoulder, and the left leg was burned off at the knee. They did make sure to add, though, that all the intestines, quote, appeared normal, except cooked.
Okay, ooh. Cooked intestines.
Haggis.
But at the same time that the supposed Gunness was being prodded in the back room of a LaPorte doctor's office, Azel Helgeline was continuing his search for his brother. Azel had gotten a hold of the LaPorte police chief, who had confirmed Andrew had been seen last in LaPorte. Azel then mailed a picture of his brother to a teller at the LaPorte bank, who also confirmed he'd seen Andrew. And it was that same teller that mailed Azel a letter on May 1st telling Azel that the Gunness place had burned to the ground and Belle Gunness herself was presumed dead.
Oh, my.
This is very similar to me in a turn of events of, like, Dear Zachary.
Yeah.
Where the event started one place and all of a sudden you just thought all of the... I mean, this all just seemed fucked up to begin with.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And you find out, like, so the house burned down and everybody's dead? This is... a little fishy.
Yeah.
Oh, I would think so.
And that's when Azel finally decided he'd better head out to LaPorte himself. Azel arrived 2 days later to find only two people still searching for the skull of the supposed Gunness, Joe Maxson and Daniel Hudson. But Azel didn't really care about the skull of Belle Gunness. By this point, Azel had pretty much already surmised that Belle had murdered her brother. Like, he'd already come to that conclusion.
Right.
So Azel asked Maxson if any large holes had been dug that spring.
No, but what do you mean by large? Do you mean, like, how big is it? I mean, I don't want to be, like, a lawyer about holes here, but, like, it seems like, what do you mean, large? Like, I think you could put a bucket in? Oh, you mean large? Like, you think you could put, like, 6 or 7 buckets?
Interesting. Maybe 6 or 7 buckets.
Oh, you're talking about the bodies. Where the bodies are. No, I'll take them there. I'll take you there.
Okay.
And that's when Maxson brought Azel to the hogs.
Oh.
The two of them started digging, and they hadn't gone 4 feet before they found a torn burlap sack, and through the tear, they could see what was obviously a human neck.
Whoa!
So they called up Sheriff Smutzer, and a dig of a different sort took place. Before the day was done, the crew had recovered the body of Andrew Helgeline in 6 pieces, head, arms, legs, and torso. And in one of the severed hands was a lock of Belle Gunness's hair.
Whoa!
So after that, the sheriff asked Maxson if there were any other soft spots on the land where similar graves might be found. And Maxson confirmed that there were quite a few.
Okay.
And the next hole dug produced 2 men, a woman, and Belle Gunness's daughter, Jenny.
Jeez.
So many bodies were pulled from the earth on Belle Gunness's land that investigators had to turn Belle's buggy shed into a makeshift morgue.
Oh my God.
And as soon as word got out, the Gunness farm became the hottest tourist attraction in Indiana.
It just beat biggest wedge of cheese and the largest thumbtack. I can't believe now it's the Gunness farm.
By May 6th, thousands of people had shown up to witness the excavation, pressing their faces into the wire fence that surrounded the hog lot so they could make sure to see each and every body that came out of the ground.
Yeah, this is like old school version of what happened during John Wayne Gacy and Jeffrey Dahmer, right? Where it's like the excavation footage where everybody's watching the blue barrels come out of the apartment building.
Yeah, except they all actually showed up on the grounds.
Well, they didn't have TVs back then, you know?
And of course, the press lost their collective minds over the whole affair, printing over 1 million words about the Bell Gunness case over the following weeks and months. Building off the not-so-distant crimes of H.H. Holmes, the Chicago press speculated that Bell must have had an accomplice with a background in medicine who assisted in dismembering the bodies. But Bell and the supposed accomplice, according to speculation, were only the final cogs in a much larger machine, which, that machine, was a city-to-farm pipeline of murder operated by Chicago's more brutal crime syndicates.
Okay.
And since people were looking into her past, they noticed that Bell Gunness had also left a trail of dead babies from Chicago to LaPorte.
Well, you gotta know how to get home.
So it was also speculated that Bell was a baby farmer.
Keep planting them, but they never grow.
Yeah, you're burying them. That's called burying them, ma'am.
See, baby farms were essentially DIY orphanages, where the said farmer would take an unwanted child off a woman's hands for a flat fee in exchange for the whole thing being hush-hush.
That's what the Amish tried to do with me and my sister.
They wanted to buy you and Jackie.
Well, they kept saying they wanted to bring us to the farm so they could show us what real work was.
Yeah, because they were just trying to teach you what real work was.
Ain't having it. Do you think these hands could take it?
No.
Look at how plush these hands are.
God, no.
Definitely not.
Well, basically, a modern-day baby farmer would be the people who take kid after kid from our foster care system here in America and only give them the barest essentials, if that, all while taking a big check from the government every month.
Horrible, yeah.
But some baby farmers wouldn't even do that. For example, a woman in England named Amelia Dyer just murdered the babies as soon as they were in her possession. And it said that Amelia Dyer murdered hundreds.
Woo! Yeah, like 400 babies.
That's crazy.
See, the key to succeeding in life is to have no conscience.
I guess.
And it was thought that Bell was possibly one of these women. But no babies were found in the ground in LaPorte, although there were still plenty of full-grown men to be found. In one hole, they found that Bell had buried various stray bones in a wooden box, and when the box was open, it was found that jellied flesh still clung to the remains. There were so many bones that one person on site said this.
You know, if all these bones belonged to one person, you'd have a monstrosity. Someone 10 or 12 feet high.
That's your
Isn't
hot
that funny?
That's your hot take, Larry? That's your hot take? If it was one person, it'd be a big person?
There'd be a lot of bones for one person, that's for certain.
Oh, my God. That man grew up to be the great-grandfather of Bill Engvall. Of course, from the Blue Collar Comedy Tour.
However, it was eventually surmised that it was enough bones for just two people. It was just 2 6-foot men put on top of each other would be 12 feet high.
Larry, yeah, technically,
two smoots
right.
Like Kissel. If you get two smoots together and like put them together, I imagine if Kissel died in 1,000 years from now, they go and they look at his bones. They're like, oh, look at this tiny dinosaur. What an incredible tiny dinosaur.
Oh, maybe if I die with Puffin, then they'll think I'm a man dog.
And of course, the crowd that had shown up day after day to watch the excavations went absolutely nuts when the box came out of the ground.
So they're just cheering this on like it's the Super Bowl.
Well, yeah, why true crime? But one newspaperman said that
Why true crime now?
Why is true crime the craze now? Why is true crime so big now? I don't get it. No.
People were so nice before. They didn't have a macabre sense of humor or a macabre desire to see death.
One newspaperman said that right before the box was unearthed, he was watching an old white bearded man pull his toddler grandchildren in a wagon toward the hog lot. They were having a nice day out together.
Of course. Of course, why wouldn't the grandfather take his grandson to the hog lot? That's where he loves to go.
But I would have loved it.
Yeah.
I would have had such a good time as a kid. Be like, where's the bodies? Where's the bodies, Grandpa Jake?
But man, you should have really been taken by the Amish. Just learn how to raise a barn. I mean, I don't know how to do it, but...
But as the old man approached the lot, the wagon toppled over and the toddlers were thrown to the ground. I mean, it just happens when you're playing with kids. Sometimes the kids fall out of the wagon.
Yeah, sure.
But it was at that moment that a cry went through the crowd...
We found another body!
Yay! New body!
Faced with the choice between helping his grandchildren or seeing a dead body, old man said to hell with it and left the kids crying in the mud and ran to join the crowd.
So Timmy
hell,
and Tank...
I see this every day. It's time to go and see some bodies.
Hey, Timmy and Tammy and Tommy, how was your day with Grandpa? Was it fun?
Grandpa went to go look at the bones while I was covered in dirt.
You've aged so fast in this little ride.
But in the midst of the excavation, another mystery was added to the story.
Mm.
Apparently, the undertaker in charge of preparing the supposed remains of Bell Gunness had come to a startling conclusion. Although Bell was 5'7" and easily 280 pounds, the headless, conveniently unidentifiable body found in the ashes of the Gunness home was probably closer to 5'2" and carried less than half the weight that Bell did.
Oh my, so Bell is like, with any luck, they'll think it's me.
This looks just like me.
Really, does it?
And with the discovery of the size discrepancy, the theories began. Essentially, there were five. Bell killed herself and her children. Bell killed her children and someone else, then removed the head of the victim and ran off. Ray Lamphere killed Bell and the children. Ray Lamphere assisted in the crimes and the cover-ups. Or finally, a Chicago gang murdered Bell and her family after the corpse farm was no longer useful or convenient.
How did Chicago just always get the raw deal by mainstream media? Just be like, it must be a Chicago gang. It was in Indiana.
No, it was the Chicago Press, and also, and it was only like what 40 miles from LaPorte.
Yeah, but 40 miles in 1906—that's like 150 miles.
I will say, Chicago kind of earned the reputation at the time. It was a violent place. There was a lot of crime happening. H.H. Holmes helped create the idea of a serial killer in Chicago.
I know. Like,
so they are very, you could see now their imaginations have gone wild.
Mm-hmm.
Because also the connection of the farm to the madam when it used to be an old like brothel, all these weird crimes that have already happened on the ground. So it has this like history. It's so ripe.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, for a fact, there's an actor, the Nicolas Cage of the time, just been like, I'll buy the property. I will buy it. I will live on this property.
Oh, the property was cursed for quite a few years afterwards.
I'm sure it probably still is.
Except, no, now there's like a nice family who lives there, and the mother's like, oh yeah, my son is very haunted. He sees ghosts all the time. It's so
he
cute.
He sees ghosts. But they put a motocross, like, track in the back of it.
Ooh, that'd be fun.
Yeah, yeah. Where the body farm is, they now ride dirt bikes.
I love it.
Yeah. Now, it seemed to investigators that the only way to really solve the mystery was to find the head of Bell Gunness.
Got to.
Or failing that, to find the teeth of Bell Gunness for identification purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the teeth idea wasn't a bad one. I mean, it was thought by those that believe Bell Gunness was in fact dead that the head had disintegrated or exploded from the heat. But the teeth might have survived.
The fucking Whoa. Movie Scanners? Do heads really explode sweet. In the heat?
See, Bell had a fairly distinctive smile, marked by two gold crowns and four porcelain teeth reinforced by an 18-karat gold backing.
Ooh.
So it was possible that her bridge work had survived the fire somehow. It was very distinctive. So Sheriff Smutzer hired a veteran prospector named Louis Schultz, a.k.a. Old Klondike, to sift through the rubble to see what he could find.
If there's gold in that there rubble, I'm the one to find it. Because they say, what would you do for a Klondike? I tell you what I'd do. I'd suck a woman's feet.
Whoa.
And on the day that old Klondike showed up, 16,000 people came to watch.
Oh my God.
In fact, the whole day had turned into a bit of a carnival for the people of Indiana because it just so happened to fall on a Sunday.
Oh, great.
They had drivers. They set up
right after church.
Right
just go watch and see the bodies.
Oh, they skipped the church that day.
Oh, they
people
did.
People started showing up at sunrise.
Okay.
Yeah, they had drivers in the port. They set up this nice little relay system for the tourists. They charged a dime for the trip to the farm.
Wow.
But to get back, that's a quarter.
Oh my God, the scam never ends.
You had vendors selling peanuts, popcorn, and lemonade. You had hucksters hawking 10-cent postcards, which featured pictures of Andrew Helgeline's
mutilated body.
Oh my God.
Sold out in minutes.
It's juicy. It's good merch.
Yeah.
They've always been doing true crime merch.
Always.
I guess so.
Always, 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 always. Why true crime now? Always. That's my question. That's my answer. Is always.
It's always been true crime. Okay.
You even had a quote unquote portly fellow selling pink ice cream and cake.
Oh.
Right next to one of the excavated graves.
I've tried all the cake. I've tried all the ice cream. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
And only days before, that grave had held the putrefied remains of several men. Not to mention the fact that the guy was standing in the middle of a recently active hog pen selling pink ice cream and cake.
This is the first, the great-great-grandfather of Ben, of Ben and Jerry.
Yes, indeed. Yep, what a difference 72 hours makes, you know? Wow.
People were even jumping into the graves.
Oh my.
Look what I'm doing. Look what I'm doing.
Are you jumping into the grave?
But they were
Yeah, look what I'm doing.
You are just jumping in. Okay.
But they were digging into the dirt. They were trying to look for little bone fragments or pieces of flesh.
Oh my God.
One girl, who was actually said to be quite handsome, she was carrying around a dead dog that she said had been killed by Belgunis while Belgunis was testing poisons. Someone had just sold some girl a dead dog that he found on the farm.
Look what I just got. Isn't this fun? It's a dead dog.
I see that.
Belgunis killed it with poison.
Really?
Isn't it cool? It's so hot right now. This is the best day of my life, this dead dog.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm going to name it Dead.
It's really sad you were born during this time because you would have loved the movie The Craft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My name's Firuza. I'm the first person to be named Firuza.
But all of that was calm and normal compared to what happened at the makeshift morgue. Now, at first, Sheriff Smutzer let people inside single file to view the piles of dismembered limbs, torsos, and heads. You figure, what's the harm?
They came to me. What's the harm?
Look at it.
Contamination of an entire of a police.
Let him look. Nah, come on. Let's take a look at it. You like it. I like it. You like it. Come on. Let's take a look at it. Look at them heads.
It's weird how small a head is. On other people, it seems big, but then when you see it just kind of dismembered rolling around the ground, you're like, huh. That's just like a little fucking thing. That's fun.
Okay. Bit of a crime scene here, but that's all right.
But pretty soon, it became apparent that just too many people had showed up. So Smutzer popped a lock on the door and told the people, show's over. No one else is going to be allowed in. In response to that, several women, quote, clawed at the little red carriage house and stuck their fingers in the cracks and wrenched in an attempt to pry the boards apart far enough to see inside. That was what the women did. The men, they boosted each other to the window at the end of the structure so they could look inside. But none of them lasted more than a few seconds before one of them knocked the other one down so they could get up and see.
Well, it's a hell of a thing to fight over.
Yeah.
But on that particular Sunday, nothing was found by old Klondike.
Whoa, Jiminy Cricket.
For 3 days, the old prospector searched through the debris and in the process found 5 men's watches, several knives, bone fragments, and a book on anatomy.
Whoa, Belgunis actually did her fucking homework.
Yeah, and she was obsessed with watches. That was one of the weird things about
really?
It.
Really?
Yeah, she loved, like, that was her, that was the trophy that she kept in a special place, that she would keep the watch of each of her victims.
Okay. Whoa. I mean, watches are pretty cool.
That's her and Tommy Romola.
Yep.
It wasn't until Tuesday, May 19th, that Schultz looked down in his sluice box and saw that he'd found, at the very least, the teeth of Belgunis. Now, the dentist who did the work on Gunnis, Dr. Ira Bell, immediately identified the bridge as his own personal work and said that Bell would have had to pull a tooth out of her own head to remove it. But since the authorities thought there was no way Belgunis could have been capable of such savagery, knowing she brutally murdered at least 11 men plus 4 of her own children, that's good enough. She wouldn't have done that. She wouldn't have pulled out of her head. She's dead. She's officially dead.
They just have to go and fucking close that case.
Mm-hmm. And with that, a grand jury officially indicted Ray Lamphere for arson
and the first degree murders of Myrtle, Lucy, Philip, and Belle Gunness.
No!
And they threw the murder of Andrew Helgeline into the mix as well, just for good measure.
It's just like, for fun.
Just for funsies.
Oh my
goodness. I am fucking beside myself, guys. I am beside myself. This is absolutely the dumbest shit. This is the dumbest shit I've ever been a part of, and I have been eating this Norwegian woman's fucking awful salted cod for years now. It was terrible. I'll say it.
Wow.
Oh, Belle, I love you and I miss you, goddammit.
Sounds like a guilty man to me.
Oh.
Now, for the full story of Ray Lamphere's trial, which is a doozy and long. I mean, it's a big, big story. You're going to have to go read Hell's Princess by Harold Schechter, the source material. It's like that is a third of the book is Ray Lamphere's trial. And it's fascinating and great. And like all the different experts that they bring in is absolutely fascinating. It's really cool to see all of this in action. But long story short, Ray Lamphere was found guilty of arson, but not of any of the murders.
Okay.
Okay, so he was acquitted of the murders.
Yes.
That's the big one.
He was acquitted of the murders, but he was still found guilty of arson.
Okay.
Which didn't make sense to anybody.
Of course not.
No, but that's just the way it goes in the justice system sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, he was sentenced to 2 years in prison, but died of tuberculosis soon after his sentencing, following a light hemorrhage during his trial in which blood just started gushing out of his face.
Oh, because I'm making strawberry syrup or something. Or this is just, I am just the unluckiest cuck in the world.
Oh, poor guy.
But the biggest question here at the end is, what the fuck happened to the real Belle Gunness?
Yes.
Now, many people are loath to draw definitive conclusions about what Belle Gunness pulled off that night in April, which is fair.
Yes.
But to us, it seems fairly obvious that Belle Gunness did not die in the fire that night, and instead murdered some poor girl, removed the head, and pulled the bridge work out of her own face to leave behind as evidence.
Because they just hired a new, like, housekeeper, like, workwoman that also disappeared. So it seems fairly obvious that she was not this headless
corpse.
So
did Belle Gunness just escape to Montreal? Like, what happened?
We don't know.
We have no fucking idea.
Oh, my God. And so she got away with this.
Yeah.
We don't know. Or she fucking died. Or that was her. Get into it.
Yeah, we'll get into it. Yeah. I mean, and quite a few people came to the same conclusion as we did. I mean, for months, if not years, Belle Gunness sightings were a fairly common occurrence throughout the country, especially the Midwest.
But you can imagine being someone who looked like Belle Gunness and be like, you're Belle Gunness, and be like, that's just really mean.
Yeah, dude.
Because all of the descriptions are just like, troll woman, is she on the loose? How many did she kill? And be like, are you Belle Gunness? And be like, could have done without that today. Thank you.
And even after Ray Lamphere died, new conspiracy theories were created around him to make the story even juicier than it already was. In one theory, it was Ray and Elizabeth Smith, his alibi lover, who had killed the Gunness family. This theory was given even more credence after a skull was found in Elizabeth Smith's home after she died. But it was soon discovered that the skull was decades old, and Smith had actually been using it for voodoo rituals.
Ooh,
voodoo. Cool. But I think that this is more of an 1880s version of a Tumblr witch.
Yeah.
She'd even covered the skull in names, including the name of the LaPorte police chief, Phil Bongers.
Phil Bongers, who was named by fucking Holden McNeely. And, like, honestly.
And Bongers is spelled with a Z.
Bongers. Honestly, that's pretty cool.
It sounds like, oh my God, what I'm going to become, the voice man on a morning radio show.
Yeah.
But Elizabeth Smith had actually written it as Phil... Phil Bungers, which could have either been a misspelling or just a way to make a bad name worse.
No, I mean, Phil Bungers. Honestly, she cursed a random dude named Phil Bungers, and Phil was just having a good day, and then all of a sudden it started raining and frogs around him. He's like,
as if my life couldn't get any worse. I got a hump on the front end of the bank. I got backwards feet.
Phil Bungers. Poor Arkansas Phil Bungers.
But in the coming decades, plenty of people would suspect the ghost Gunness in various crimes. She was even put forth as a possible suspect in the infamous Wineville chicken coop murders out there in Los Angeles in 1928. But the MO was all wrong. The Wineville chicken coop murders, that was all little boys.
Okay.
But there was one case in particular in which it was at the very least plausible the perpetrator might have been Belle Gunness. And that came in 1931, almost 25 years after Gunness had supposedly died. That's how long the memory of Belle Gunness lasted.
Wow.
The theory was that Belle Gunness had moved to Chicago, where she changed her name to Esther Carlson and got work as a housekeeper. There, she laid low until the murderous urge rose once again. That year, her employer, August Lindstrom, had opened up a joint account with Esther in the amount of $2,000. And August had died with a belly full of arsenic only a week later. It was at that point that someone realized that Esther was the right age and the right size and had the look of Belle Gunness.
Wow.
She had that X factor.
And when her home was searched, investigators found an old battered trunk containing, among other things, a photo of two girls and a boy who, according to the people in the port, looked strikingly like the Gunness children, although at that point the Gunness children were 23 years dead.
Wow.
Wow.
Can you picture a child that you saw 23 years ago, like, fully?
No, I
barely remember what my niece looks like.
Yep. They all look the same.
But when they took the picture to LaPorte, like, everyone was like, yep, that's the Gunness kids. That's definitely them.
I mean, I don't know. There was less photographs back then. Maybe their brains were stronger.
Maybe they
could hold the picture longer in their mind.
Socrates actually damned the use of constant writing because he said our memories would fade without having to remember the stories constantly.
I believe it.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Who was that you mentioned? Socrates, remember that?
Yeah, that's good. Now, of course, Esther denied that she was the Indiana ogress, saying that she wasn't even Norwegian. She was Swedish. And she hadn't spent a day of her life in Indiana. But before she even went to trial for the murder of her employer, she died. And the truth seemingly died with her. For many years, Esther Carlson was the world's best bet as to what became of Belle Gunness after she killed her children and burned down her own house. But all that changed in 2014. That year, a Selbu native named Newt Jensen looked into Esther Carlson's backstory and found that she was without a doubt telling the truth. She was not Belle Gunness.
Really?
Basically, they just had to prove at some point that her life existed outside of Belle Gunness's point, and it was close, though.
Yeah.
It was hard.
It was eerily close.
They had to run it down, but they finally found a spot where Esther Carlson was in a different place than Belle Gunness.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. As to what happened to Belle Gunness, it's possible the body found in the house was hers and the undertaker made a mistake. It's possible that Ray Lamphere had a hand in the whole thing. And it's possible that Belle Gunness just got away. What is not possible is any hope that we'll ever find out the truth about what happened to Belle Gunness. For better or worse, Belle will forever remain one of the 20th century's greatest mysteries.
Whoa! That is a crazy, crazy story. So, Belle, if you're alive today, we'd love to interview you for our Patreon series, Henry and I.
If you're 152 years old.
And, of course, why wouldn't you be 152 years young, Belle? We don't want to be rude. Please call
in. I think my opinion, right? You read all of this stuff. I think that she got away with it. She left. I think Ray Lamphere. This is my estimation. I think Ray Lamphere helped her. I think she got away. And I think she just realized if I just am just that much more careful, I can continue to run my scams.
Yeah. And just keep on moving. I definitely agree that Belle Gunness got away, but I don't think Ray Lamphere had anything to do with it.
I don't know though.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just my gut tells me that Ray just was wrong place, wrong time, useful idiot. She just saw a guy to pin the crimes on and knew that it was going to be easy. Pulled the teeth out of her face, you know, threw him on the ground and then
Left town.
You know, this is, I don't want to have, this is a bit of a spoiler alert, but it reminds me of what happened at the end of the TV series Veep.
Yeah.
I didn't see it.
I don't want to spoil it.
We don't need to spoil it.
But I know what you're saying. Very Belle. She should have been nice to one person. She's a mysterious woman.
She knows to keep her cards close to her chest.
Yeah.
And that's what all these ladies seem to know. Everybody, that's why they are better at crime.
See, I've kind of got a feeling that Belle Gunness, like, because if she did run off, that meant that she was traveling with at least $1 million in cash.
Woo-hoo!
Alone. On the road, you know, just on the roads of, you know,
this
Indiana
is a woman who potentially,
in 1908.
But she pulled her own teeth out of her mouth.
True.
I think there's nothing, she's safer than an armored car.
You get three guys with guns, two guys with guns, one guy with a gun. She is dead in the ditch.
Yeah.
She could have been gotten.
Yeah.
She definitely could have gotten on the road.
I don't know why.
That's quite possible.
But that's kind of my gut feeling, is that she just got and all of her money was stolen. And, you know, one of the, and that family went on to be the Waltons.
Really?
And
thank
they found
you, Sam
it in Walmart.
Walmart.
I honestly think it's true. It's got to be something
it's
like
very
that.
Possible.
One of those, like, purely evil barons. It's just fucking the Cheney family.
All right, there it is. Belle Gunness. What a great series that was. Informative, interesting. And, yeah, I guess we have, do we want to thank someone?
Yeah, special thanks to Research Assistant Rachel Hsu, as always, for her help on this episode.
Thank you so much. And we want to say a big thank you to everyone who came out to see our show in Oakland, the Fox Theater. That might be the most beautiful theater we have ever seen.
So, so beautiful.
So pretty.
It was wonderful.
And thanks
so
everyone
now,
who
so
came
you know,
out.
Next week, we got a Relax Fit episode coming your way. And then the week afterwards, we're going to start this summer. It's already the middle of the summer. Summer into fall. I think we're going to be doing some of my favorite topics we've ever done.
I'm very, very
fucking excited.
And I want to thank everyone also who came out to our show in San Diego. That was incredible. And thanks to everyone who came out to the Hollywood Forever Cemetery in beautiful Los Angeles. That was a total miracle.
Mm-hmm.
And it was awesome. So thank you all so much.
It was a dream come true that I did not know was a dream until we were about halfway through the show.
Yeah.
And I
realized, like, oh, wow, this is an important moment. I should be trying to remember this.
Yeah.
It was wonderful.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, thank
wonderful.
You everyone so much. That was so much fun.
Yes. And we're excited to see everyone out on the road here in the very, very, very near future. So let's see. Is there anything else? Anything else we got?
Well, we've got a lot of shows coming up here in the coming months.
It'll be fun. Yeah. It'll be fun.
Yeah, our next mini tour, we got St. Paul, Des Moines, and Milwaukee on the 8th, 9th, and 10th. St. Paul sold out from what I hear.
Hey, all right.
But we still got tickets for Des Moines and Milwaukee. That's August 9th and August 10th. Then the next mini tour is in Atlantic City, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and Port Chester, New York. That is August 16th, 17th, and 18th. There's still tickets for all those shows. Come on out to the Atlantic City show. That's going to be a weird, it'll be like a weird one, on kind of on par with the Hollywood Forever show, where like it's at a casino. It's going to be strange.
Yes, it will be.
It's going to be strange.
And if you are in Milwaukee on the 11th, I'm also going to be premiering Hail Yourself America, my little documentary. Thanks to everyone who came out at Nighthawk Cinema for that on this past Wednesday. That was awesome. So stick around and you can see me twice in Milwaukee. And I believe I'll be doing something in Minneapolis also.
Hell yeah, that's
so
awesome.
That'll be cool. Is Atlantic City going to be full of gamblers? Or is it going to be like, I love that. That crowd is going to be really interesting.
It's going to be the desolate souls.
But they
they're
know.
They're going to come to Atlantic City. Come visit us in Atlantic City and help take care of us. Help protect us. Also, show us Atlantic City's got a heart in there.
It does,
let's do this, guys.
AC is back. I love it.
Yeah, and if you're here in the New York City area, if you didn't know, Port Chester is like 30 minutes north.
Okay.
Yeah, Port Chester is very close to New York City. There's a lot of concerts out there. Usually when Ween plays around here, they play Port Chester.
So awesome.
So, yeah, a lot of concerts are up in Port Chester. So, yeah, if you're in New York City, just pop on up. Come see us there.
We're in good company if Ween
it's a good. You know why those smaller market shows are actually funner to come see too? Like if you come see one of those shows being like, because we have nothing to do. So we just in a city. just drinking and hanging out.
Yeah.
So come find our bullshit.
Absolutely. And keep on supporting all the shows here on The Last Podcast Network. I believe that's basically about it, right, guys?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And, of course, we got our UK and European tour in September. Well, we can't wait to see all y'all then.
Cannot wait. All right, everyone, thank you so much for listening. Hail yourselves!
Hail Satan!
Again.
Let's do a Magustalations.
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 You can give yourself a little once. You can give yourselves a little Magustalation.
Absolutely.
All right, for all the fucking people, for all the people that count on it, the people that need it to get through their day.
Like all of us.
Hail me.
Absolutely.
Hail me, goddammit.
And yeah,
I'll
just
kill everybody.
Don't
I'll kill fucking everybody.
Don't kill everybody. I don't even know why you're anything with that. I mean, maybe don't add. Maybe don't you know, solicit people in a magazine and then kill them.
Hmm.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.